You're about to enjoy episode 357 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on November the 7th, 2011.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Mr. Zuckerberg, do I have your full attention?
Why would anyone trust this government not to make a complete and utter shambolic mess of the national broadband network?
Which part of time would they like us to go back to? 1960, 1930?
Can you really give that guarantee when you don't seem to know what peak speed is? I'll tell you what it is.
Okay, great. Let's give everybody a case.
The future is here.
So now technology has caught up with reality.
Ever since Telstra was privatised, Australians have suffered.
Technology has had a huge impact on our love lives.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McCollum and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Being a firm believer of not believing everything you read on the internet, as well as being a long way from April Fool's Day, I couldn't find the right words to describe my feelings when I read an article on stuff.co.nz detailing a new pilot program the search giant Google was planning. According to the article, New Zealanders looking for restaurants on the internet will find it easier to pick with a new addition to Street View, Google's controversial street imaging project. The new feature will allow the public to view interior images of shops and other businesses found on its maps. The project will kick off in a limited number of cities in New Zealand, including Auckland, Wellington, Christchurch, Dunedin, Invercargill, Blenheim and Nelson, before moving to Australia, Japan and the US, as well as London and Paris. Google said it was inviting the most searched businesses, including restaurants, hotels, shops, gyms, and vehicle repair shops, to request a visit by its photographers. Businesses have been told to warn customers and employees about the photo shoot, and Google has promised to blur out or refuse to publish any images that include bystanders. The photo shoot will produce 360-degree images using fisheye and wide-angle lenses, as well as stills, and business owners could also upload their own pictures. Google said the project is on a completely voluntary basis. When will it ever end?
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Has Google gone too far this time, taking Street View indoors? Android phone repairs cost telcos billions. Avid release Media Composer 6. Canon release the new EOS C300. We look at a stop-motion video made with a quarter of a million jelly beans. And Adam Turner sets up a new PC and shares his tricks to remove bloatware. First up, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Liberal MPs are critical of NBN rollout delays. Apple says it will fix a battery bug in its new iPhone operating system. Internet Explorer usage continues a steady decline. Scientists complete a 520-day mission to Mars simulation, and the Parkes Radio Telescope turns 50 years young. Welcome to Tech Talk News. A number of federal MPs have spoken out against what they perceive as being unfair delays in deployment of the national broadband network. Ms. Suzanne Lay, MP, is the Liberal member for Farrer, encompassing a large area of western and southern New South Wales. Ms. Lay last week criticised the government and NBN Co, saying it could be 9 years before her constituents had access to the national broadband network. Similarly, the South Australian Liberal member for Grey, Mr. Rowan Ramsey, says the NBN will take years to reach outback communities without providing his constituents with technology over and above what they're currently using. Ms. Lay on ABC Radio last week.
We have the University of Sydney Department of Rural Health, we have the Royal Flying Doctor, School of the Air, and all we are promised is a lousy 12 megabits per second with either wireless or a slightly upgraded satellite. It isn't good enough.
Minister for Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy, Senator the Honourable Stephen Conroy, responded by pointing out that the Liberals were opposed to building the NBN and that under the Liberal Party policy, rural constituents would never have access to high-speed internet. On its website, NBN Co recently released a 12-month plan detailing scheduled NBN construction activity and the communities in each state and territory where work will begin between now and September 2012. NBN Co says the 12-month schedule will be updated on a quarterly basis to include additional locations, and in early 2012, NBN Co will issue a 3-year indicative view of the rollout, updated annually until completion of the rollout in 10 years' time. Apple has acknowledged a problem in its latest iPhone operating system, iOS 5, and says a fix will be released in a number of weeks. Many early adopters of iOS 5 say a battery life issue is causing no end of pain, with fully charged batteries draining by nearly 20% in around 50 minutes. Apple says a bug in iOS 5 means that if users do not disable the setting time zone, iPhones will continuously poll servers for users' locations, even if not required. Technology journalist Mr. Asher Moses from The Age Digital Life said that an over-the-air update to fix the iOS 5 bugs is expected to be sent straight to iPhone owners' handsets. Apple last week released iOS 5.0.1 to developers, which purports to fix the issue. Use of Microsoft's Internet Explorer web browser on desktop computers has dropped to an all-time low of just under 53%. The drop comes with a surge in popularity of browsers on mobile telephones, tablet computers, and small-screen devices, where a Microsoft web browser is conspicuously absent. According to internet research firm NetMarketShare, Microsoft's Internet Explorer now accounts for about 52.6% of all desktop web traffic, a decline from around 60% just 12 months ago. Mozilla's Firefox also declined over the same period, from 23.7% down to 22.5%. Use of Google's Chrome, however, nearly doubled, from 10% at the end of last year to just under 18% now. In the mobile and tablet arena, which now comprises 6% of all web traffic, Apple's Safari is the clear winner, with use climbing from 49% to 62% of all web traffic. The Android browser has also experienced growth since the start of 2011, while combined Symbian, BlackBerry and other browsers are steadily diminishing, now accounting for a combined total of just over 6% of all web traffic. Six intrepid scientists have completed a 520-day mission to Mars without actually leaving planet Earth. Chinese, Italian and French astronauts, as well as three cosmonauts, comprised the mission, which was conducted by the Moscow-based Institute for Medical and Biological Problems with cooperation from the European Space Agency. The six men spent the time in cramped quarters at the Institute in Moscow to simulate an actual mission to Mars and to study the psychological effects of long-haul spaceflight. Crew members were allowed to communicate with the outside world via email with a built-in delay of 25 minutes to simulate radio transmission time in deep space. Organisers of the Mars 500 project have hailed it as a resounding success. And the famous Parkes Radio Telescope celebrated its 50th birthday last week. Regarded internationally for the role it played in beaming live footage from the Apollo 11 moon landing to televisions around the world, the radio telescope, known affectionately as the Dish, was built in 1961 under the auspices of the CSIRO. The 64-metre Dish is the second largest in the Southern Hemisphere after the installation at Tidbinbilla near Canberra. The CSIRO's chief astronomer, Professor Phil Diamond, spoke on ABC Radio last week. Professor Diamond said that the contributions made by the Parkes Radio Telescope to astronomy had been invaluable.
Making the first map of the magnetic field in our own galaxy, discovering more pulsars, these are the rotating remnants of supernova exploding stars, discovering more, in fact twice as many as any other all the other telescopes in the world combined. Huge range of science, and it's still doing world-class science today.
Astronomers say the Parkes Radio Telescope is fitted with state-of-the-art equipment and has a very strong future ahead. I'm Dr. Rom, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Ted Talk Radio.
The only lone panellist, Dr. Ron.
I don't understand trick or treat. What is Halloween? It's not an Australian holiday.
Oh, yeah, Halloween's a crock too, just like vendor-sponsored surveys.
Nokia has unveiled its first Windows phone. A lot of people have said, oh, about time. And a lot of other people have said, who cares?
There's the Melbourne Cup, the race that stops a nation, and there's Alan Joyce, the CEO that stops a nation.
The Australian carrier, Qantas, has decided to pack it all up and go away for a while.
It does not have the near-field communication chip in it.
I saw it while I was sitting at my door.
I don't think we think this is where it's going to stop. This is just, from our perspective, the first step in what will be a journey that will really transform the way people pay.
When is Steve to be canonised?
You don't get that with the Apple system.
Our operators are standing by.
I'm playing Bejeweled at the moment. That's fun.
Graham would have smacked you across the back of the head by now.
Yeah, I know. Yes, too right.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
On Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting in front of me this evening, the one and only has returned, the Rob Oakeshott of Tech Talk Radio. Graham Callaghan, good evening.
Good evening, Andrew.
How was the seaworthiness of the boat that you said sailed upon?
It was extremely seaworthy.
Where'd you go?
It was extremely comfortable.
It was a big one?
Yeah, it was very big. It was a huge ship.
Was it? Huge ship. Yeah, where'd you go?
To one of the Pacific Islands.
Oh, yeah, Mura Atoll or something?
No, not quite. No, New
French
Caledonia.
Provincial? No,
New Caledonia.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was a fantastic trip. Unbelievable.
Very good. And how was the internet coverage on said ship?
Was, it wasn't bad when I got around to using it. And I'm ashamed to admit this on this show, but I found I had better things to do than
Graham,
going on the internet.
I'm so encouraged to actually hear you say that.
Who are you and what have you done with Graham Callaghan?
See, we knew Dr. Ron, he'd come back a changed man, and he's had time off the internet thingy, which is really good. How are you, Dr. Ron?
I'm going well. How are you this week?
Yeah, I'm good. It's been a big news week this week for me, personally.
Right.
Technically speaking. New things. New toys.
Have you got new toys?
Look, Avid have launched Media Composer 6,
yes,
which is one of my industry tools, which we'll talk about. That's an editing, post-production editing facility, software thingy. And the new Canon C300 was launched in Hollywood on last week with great accolades.
That sounds like a camera to me.
It is. It is. It's another equivalent of the Sony F3. So it's a $20,000 camera, which is designed to make feature films on. And no longer do we need these, you know, amazingly, incredibly expensive cameras. So here they come. And, of course, Canon has a reputation for digital SLRs, which is pretty good.
Are you going to get one? That's the question.
Nah. Well, you know, can you lend me a few bucks? We could use our Commonwealth Bank Ka-ching app and you could send me across a few shekels.
That was good last week hearing from the Commonwealth Bank about the new Ka-ching application.
Yeah. So the next person introduces Lena, who has an Apple, but you probably don't have a Commonwealth Bank account.
No, I do not.
No, so you go against the Commonwealth Bank's demographics.
Oh, do I? Do they have demographics today?
They do. Mm. They do. Apparently, 80% of their transactions on NetBank are from iPhone people.
Oh.
So you fit their demographic because you're one of 80% that use it. The rest of us, 20%, we're Android people. We like using holes in the wall, I guess, and doing those sort of things. How was your trick and treat, by the way?
Excellent.
Because you weren't in last week. Did you bring a note?
No, I gave my note before
Halloween. You did, actually. We talked about you.
Oh,
I'm sure you knew
great.
That. We did.
What's this crazy trick-or-treating? What were you doing? It's not an Australian holiday.
It was a Halloween
holiday.
Party.
What
no.
is Halloween?
Hallow's Eve.
Yeah.
Or Halloween. It's the only party where you're not forced to spend time with your family or buy anyone presents or do anything you don't want to do.
So it's a sort of holiday that you subscribe to.
Yeah, you just dress up and have fun.
Lydia Davis, our US correspondent who lives in Palo Alto in California, was around at Marissa's house, Marissa Mayer from Google, taking pictures of the pumpkins in her front patch.
Ooh, people go really nuts with that.
They take it very seriously over there, don't they?
They definitely do. It's a bit of fun. You're seeing it more and more in the shops now, some Halloween stuff popping up.
Yeah?
I think it's going to be a bigger thing in a few years than it is right now.
There's been a lot of, trick-or-treating of recent... People are, I think, a bit sinister in this country. When some come up and say, oh, are you into Halloween? They go, oh, yeah, what? Do you trick-or-treat? And they go, oh, we trick, we give, you know, anaphylactic kids peanuts, you know, and stuff like that. You know, it's like, no, come on.
That's
no
homicide.
I know. But it's just the attitude that some people have in this country to Halloween. Did you find any of that whilst you were out and about?
No, I didn't. But I've seen pictures of people putting on Twitter, they dipped onions, raw onions in the caramel so they look like apples.
Yeah, see, this is what they do.
But that's all part of the fun.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's the trick bit, isn't it?
Who
did
I hear say that it was an American thing and not
me,
just,
about
it's
a minute
not an
ago.
American thing.
It's not.
It's a pagan thing.
It's Scottish.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I love this show. You learn all sorts of things here.
It's not a holiday celebrated in Australia, is that
no,
better, Graham?
Correct.
It is, actually. I think you'll find.
Oh, no. I'm going to stick to my guns.
It's not
I don't
officially
think it
a
is.
Holiday. We'd prefer to give holidays to, you know, racing animals.
Correct.
Yeah, isn't that fun? I had a friend of mine who's...
Which actually, I also missed while I was away.
Yeah, you're lucky. I had a friend from the UK who is now currently residing in Melbourne, and he's from Chester in England, and he sent me an email, and he said, they're serious about this horse race down here. Nothing's open on the particular Tuesday. I said, yeah, welcome. And, of course, because it is Melbourne, we all take the Monday off just to coincide with that, so we have a super-duper long weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone trying to deal with anyone in the Melbourne metro area, too bad on Cup weekend. Yeah.
Pretty much. But yeah, it was lots of fun.
Lots
sorry,
of fun.
Sorry to miss the show, but I'm back now.
No, we missed you and I had to do the games review, so I did Bejeweled.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, it's a great game. I love it.
PopCap. It is a
good
game.
Yeah, it is. PopCap.
You should try Plants vs. Zombies. It's by them as well.
Really?
It's excellent.
Yeah. Hey, how's the Batman thing coming along? Isn't there a new Batman game out? I think Brian was talking about it in the office today that's gone through the roof.
It has.
Are you going to give us an update? Because we missed you last week.
I will. I can. I would like to play a bit more of it before I talk about it, if I may.
Oh, okay.
I might talk about it next week.
All right. That'd be good. That'd be good.
But it's lots of fun. You can play as Catwoman, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, you have mentioned it. I remember you mentioning
it. Andrew Ken or One Ken?
One can.
The collective noun of one.
One may.
How's that work?
Play oneself as Catwoman.
Right. You were just looking at Andrew and you said you can play as Catwoman. I've seen Andrew do that before and it didn't end well. We've got correspondence if you want to
hang on.
Me to pull myself out of this dive.
Yeah, just hang on a sec. The chat's gone off tonight. I'm just having a bit of a scroll.
It's very busy.
Lots of people in the chat.
That's something else what I was supposed to connect to.
Yeah, you've forgotten, haven't you, Graham?
I have.
Well, there's a lot of people in tonight.
Hello to everyone in the chat. If you're listening to us live, you can come and socialise with us in the chat room, which is chat.techtalkradio.com.au. A lot of the regulars are in there, and I think there's a few newies in there too. But anyway, come along and say good day. And all that sort of stuff. Tonight on the show, we've got some interesting stuff. We have a guest in this evening too. Nothing like the end of year guests that we have. Simon Hahn is in this evening, and we're going to be talking about e-learning. Where's Simon from? Well, funny you should ask that, because I've just been handed a bio just before. Simon's the president of the e-learning industry association of Victoria, a fast-growing community of developers, suppliers, and users of e-learning products and services. Which is quite timely, considering. Were you here when I had my rant about the Victorian Education Department and the one-on-one computer programming sort of
and
thing?
And the laptops that didn't seem like they were terribly up to date.
I don't know what we'll find there, but nonetheless, it's sort of one of my be in my bonnet at the moment. But anyway, Simon's coming up this evening. Also, Oddspot, what a great website of the week this week, Dr. Ron. I showed you in the office today.
It's thanks good.
To. And if you listen closely to Adam Turner's View from the Couch this week, you'll get a bit of a sneak into what it might be. Listen closely, pen's ready. And I must also say that in Adam's view this week, there is an Adobe alert.
Oh, no. Hasn't he learned?
10 lashings.
Take him out in the car park after the show, I think, and have a quiet chat with him.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, and there's a couple other interesting things. But anyway, that's Adam that we love and adore. That's coming up very shortly too. All right, Dr. Ron, a correspondence that needs to be entered into this evening.
Well, speaking of the whole laptop in the classroom thing that you mentioned before, Adabear says, further to last week's correspondence, read the XP operating system on school laptops. Hey guys, I think you missed my point about XP and Microsoft extended support. I think we did. You're renting a laptop for 3 years.
Yeah.
If you have only just looked at the laptop, I can only guess the rental period will start next year, 2012.
Correct.
And in 3 years, it'll be 2014.
Yeah.
So you lose support from Microsoft halfway through the last year.
Standard.
And that means no more patches after April 2014.
That means no security updates. That means if there's a security flaw found in XP, that it will not be patched.
Oh. Love it.
It's some more ammunition for you.
Love it.
That means that Windows XP will rapidly become unsupportable and dangerous to use when connected to networks.
Could self-destruct at any moment. Oh, okay. Yeah, good. Thanks. AJ, was it?
Adabear. Longtime friend of the panel, Grant, said in a public Google Plus post today, which I saw and I had a good laugh at.
Grant S?
Yes.
Oh, yes. What's he doing these days?
Hi, Grant.
Yeah, we know Grant.
That's Grant I know, yeah.
That's Grant you know. Yeah.
Cool.
Interesting email signature from Census. Who prints the telephone books in Australia? Census cares for the environment. Think before you print. You print
Think
telephone
before
books.
You print.
Hello, Census. Let's keep churning those phone books out. Tristan,
you know you can opt out to those now.
Yeah, yep. Thank goodness.
Yeah, we talked about it on a different radio station.
Yeah,
the other
but
day.
Then what are you going to put your monitor on? To
a
get it to the right
stand.
Height.
A monitor, yeah, exactly, or a monitor arm. Have you seen the monitor arms? They're really good, Graham.
They deliver us free monitor stands every year.
Well, maybe, Graham, they'll become a collector's item just for you.
Mm. Maybe it's time to upgrade from the paper version to a non-analog version.
You can put a whole heap of CDs there.
I never open the phone book, but it's good, it's good for holding things up.
Yeah. That's about all it's good for.
Tristan via the Tech Talk Radio contact form says, hi, guys. Tristan's freak in the chat room. Is Freak in there tonight?
No.
Oh,
yes.
Come on.
No. No.
Come on, Tristan. Where are you? Log on. Hi, guys. I was listening to the podcast and you were talking about Nokia. I used to use Nokia many years ago. Then I shifted to LG in between the older style phones and smartphones. Then when I transitioned to the smartphones, I switched back to Nokia.
Oh.
Biggest, he says in capital letters, mistake ever.
He didn't buy one of those dreadful N9 things, did he?
I bought a dreadful Nokia N9 thing.
Oh, no.
I keep getting press releases from Nokia. You guys probably do too. And do you read them or just go, give up, guys?
I think I'll move on. They go in the spam folder.
I saw an advertisement for one on the telly the other day. I couldn't stop myself laughing.
They're the Nokia of mobile phone. Oh, wait.
Hang on. The Nokia of... No. I bought a Nokia N97. This phone was terrible. It was clunky, horrible, and pretty much bricked. It wouldn't do what I wanted, the GUI was slow, and even making a call was almost impossible. Texting drove me nuts, and the Ovi store was abysmal. We don't use the word abysmal enough on Tech Talk Radio.
Or Ovi.
Well, they go well together.
They do. Synonymous. The Symbian operating system was pathetic, and I highly doubt Mego would be much better. Mego is the Linux development platform for Nokia handsets. I had this piece of crap for about 6 months in an 18-month contract. Don't hold back, Tristan.
18-month contract?
18-month contract. And was so distressed and frustrated by this pile of junk, I sold it for $125. I thought this was awesome because I reckon you should have had to pay someone to take it off you. I've now transitioned to a real smartphone, an HTC Desire HD, which is ruddy awesome. I'm going to stick with HTC from now on as I'm stoked with them in the Android market.
Good lad.
He says his other half has a Galaxy S2. He still prefers his HTC, and he continues to rant and rave about Nokia for some pages. I won't read it all
as
out.
You would.
No, it went on considerably.
It did.
As you would.
Cheers, Tristan. Thanks for the feedback, Tristan. Regular contributor GJMCN via the contact form says, I had a look at the Optus PVR deal, and you are right, though it's a bigger hard drive and would be good for those with no PVR. A 1 terabyte hard disk drive, high definition tuners, two of them, an internet electronic program guide. It's more or less the same deal as the Telstra box, unless the Fetch side gives free-to-air down the wire. I was hoping it would be more like their TV Now mobile PVR in the cloud model. This would have got us over the terrestrial reception problems we're having here. You plugged the TV antenna in your television yet, Graham?
No, but the Foxtel IQ2 recorded everything we wanted while we were away.
Really? What did you want recorded? Oh, no, don't answer that.
No.
Regarding free-to-air, I agree and disagree with Adam. I believe that terrestrial free-to-air is far, far better than cable solutions for getting things out to the masses. That is why in America, the ham radio movement is held in some esteem after Katrina and more recent incidents. I guess what he's saying is when you lose the terrestrial network, you've got radio which is
more
reliable.
I'm not quite sure where that argument sort of jumped ship halfway through. I thought I wasn't...
Can I go back a...
Quite sure where that was going.
Can I go back an argument?
You can.
Damo the Greek in the chat.
The geek, sorry. that's what I did. Never let me forget.
He's just telling us about his use of Yellow Pages. He's got 26 of them strapped at the top of his washing machine, which stops it dancing out of the laundry. That's very good. Good use of a phone book, don't you think?
That's a good use for them.
Graham, there you go. There's another use for them. They should keep on bringing him out.
And Darren, last but not least, by the contact form says, Darren's our UK correspondent. He's often in the chat room too. Is Darren there tonight?
No. But we do have Lyd's joined us. I'm assuming that's Lyd from far off. The planets must have aligned and the US must have gone into daylight saving.
The time zones have shifted again, yes.
Yeah, so we've gone forward and she's come back. So it's only, I think, 5 hours difference. So if you add 5 hours, it's about 2 a.m. for her. She's or 1 a.m. for her.
But 5 hours
she'll tell us
and
in the
a
chat
day.
Yeah, but she's always back. She's back in time.
It's almost always yesterday in America.
Yeah.
Darren says, DAB is dead.
Yeah, I know.
Interesting article on internet radio from the UK, and he's pointed us to a link to the T3.com website.
I printed that out, actually. I thought it'd be worth talking about tonight.
It's a good one to talk about. DAB, he says, is a waste of time, effort, and taxpayers' money. The link to T3.com is an article that says, in-car internet radio is just 3 years away from widespread inclusion. According to
it's a tight wait for that, wouldn't you?
Product marketing manager at Vauxhall.
Yeah, the only problem is
tune into next year as you drive down the country road.
How much bandwidth of the limited available spectrum do you want to allocate to delivering what's essentially broadcast content, each separate individually to separate cars? It's insane. It's crazy.
Yeah, but people will do it.
Yeah, they will. It's crazy and insane. And you're right, people will do it and,
You need a holiday. You need to get away from it all.
Yeah, he just had one. You wouldn't believe, would you? He's come back here for more of the same.
Why does he do this to himself?
I don't know.
That's all the correspondence, Andrew. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk.
Talk Radio.
Yeah, so big news this week. Canon released the new C300, which was, from my point of view and a lot of people in the television industry, was quite a bit of a look-see. New camera. We didn't quite know what to expect, but it's really Canon's foray into motion picture cameras and stuff like that. Now, because in the industry, there's a high level of camera, which is all the, you know, massive ones that no one can ever afford, the Panavisions and all those sort of things. The really big, expensive Sony 444 cameras and stuff like that. But this is the next line down, which is just a little bit above television, broadcast TV type sort of technology.
Who would use this sort of hardware?
People would use this hardware for those who have existing Canon lenses, because the glass in front of the camera is the most expensive part of the camera.
And that's all interchangeable, is it?
Yeah, they're basically using the EF lenses. EF? EX? EF lenses and the PL mounts. There's two flavors you can get in this camera. And
chocolate?
Yes, chocolate and strawberry.
Excellent.
And as you know, Dr. Ron, you know, we've got glass in the office, which is fairly expensive, and it'll actually clip on the front of one of these, which I think is really good when it comes to if you're making a decision to buy a particular camera, if you need to A-shoot anything from music videos, television commercials, TV programs.
It's pretty heavy too.
Or even feature films. Oh, the glass. Yeah, don't drop it.
Don't drop it on your toe.
Review I'm reading here says you can buy it either with the standard EF mount or with the PL mount. So
yeah,
you get either version.
Yeah, strawberry or vanilla as we were, the two flavours, which I think is really good, which means you can use existing glass. And, of course, a set of primes and stuff like that these days for the digital SLRs is not really going
to
break the bank too much.
You'll have to explain that.
Primes. Yes, I will. Prime lenses are fixed focal lengths. You know, the human eye...
The standard sort of kit of fixed lenses. So yeah. They have one that looks
it
roughly
doesn't zoom.
Like a... Yeah.
And the reason, and because it doesn't zoom, it doesn't have all the mechanics in it, so it becomes sharper on all the edges and it looks crisper,
and traditionally,
sharper,
you
better.
You have one that's roughly the same view as the human eye gives.
50mm.
And, yep, the old 50mm lens on the... Yep.
Yep.
And you'd have one that's a little bit tighter to get in a bit closer. Maybe, what are they, 135?
Potentially, yeah.
Yep. And you'd have one that's a nice wide-angle lens, maybe a 35.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a bit of good news. I won't elaborate on it here, but it was just one of the new camera tech gadgety things. I know that a lot of people are into DSLRs who listen to the show, so...
Like me.
Yeah. What have you got?
Nikon D90.
Oh, you're a Nikon girl.
Yeah, at the moment.
But this is not a stills camera. This is a movie camera.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's got two flash ports on the back, which is good, so you can keep recording.
Yep.
Whilst you're out shooting.
You'd be able to do stills as well, wouldn't you?
You might be able to, but this is... Whereas traditionally we've had a still camera that can take
video. Yeah.
This is a video camera that may do... I don't know whether it does stills. I don't think it does, but I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
Yeah, because the EU doesn't like it that our DSLRs can do video. So they limit us to 10 minutes of straight footage before
you
have to stop.
Canon do that as well, too, in there. But I think it's a bit
more
than 10.
All DSLRs do.
I think it's about... Oh, it could be longer. I haven't really read up, so...
Yeah, but it's not very long.
No. Mm. No. But still, all good. So that was a bit of good news that came out of Hollywood on the weekend. And there's some great little short films that have been shot already, which are up on Vimeo. You'll find them, which is good. Also, Media Composer 6, which is the industry standard video editing software, which is traditionally what I have, the Symphony and the Media Composer. They've finally moved into 64-bit world.
Well, that'll make you happy.
A lot of Apple people have begun, about time, too.
You're always bemoaning the absence of 64-bit support and applications.
Correct. Well, hopefully things will work faster, better, and utilize all the memory in said machines for both Mac and PC, which would be very good.
You mentioned Vimeo just then.
Vimeo, yes.
They're in my bad books.
Why? What have they done to you?
They take down video of games because they say that games aren't in the artistic cultural spectrum.
Yeah.
All their other stuff is.
Not a copyright problem?
Nope.
No?
Nope. Oh. Indie games, if you want to get a video of your indie game on there, your own game. They take it down and say that games are not in there, in what they're trying to curate.
I think
games aren't art, to which I say...
I agree with you to a degree in yes, that they are. But I think they're really targeting filmmakers and cinematographers as opposed to gamers.
But they let
that's what YouTube's
musicians
for.
Get on there and stuff. So if they let musicians and filmmakers, they should let gamers on there too.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Musicians and drummers and people.
Yeah.
Drummers.
Drummers and that.
Yeah, they hang around with musicians.
Yeah.
Oh, let's not start the music crush. Come on, moving on quick.
Yep.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Google. They tweaked their algorithm in search this week fresh results, apparently. So if you've been tweaking and optimizing and doing all sorts of things, keep a lookout. The web giant said it's trying to surface the most relevant results to users, which is what they've been saying for years, really. And with more and more real-time data popping up on the net, Google has changed its algorithms to find it. Have you had a look in analytics of recent times?
That's all gone
socially based real-time now, too.
I knew it had gone real-time, but I haven't had a play around with it yet.
And they've changed their interface, too?
I knew that they changed their interface. I've seen the new interface, but have you done any work with the new real-time stuff?
I've been tinkering with it at the moment to see how it works and looks and feels. And
does it work?
Yes, they have done a lot of work on it.
Does it
I don't know. I haven't tested. Yes, it does. And it just lets you dig a bit further into some of the results, which is also very good. But real-time is good. It still gives you, I think when I logged in, it gives you the old default thing. So you have to, like, if you want to know what's happening today, you can't really. You have to go and look on.
Do you have to put new code in your web pages?
No, not that I was told to do when I was tinkering with it.
Right.
It's the same old bit of code and stuff, but yeah.
So what do you have to do to make it work for you?
I think you need links from social networking to bring it in to actually... So, for example, if you tweet something and it looks at a link, it can tell that it's come from a social network link or a Facebook link or one of those things. So it's now determining those that come directly to it who come in via a social network and all that, and you can get those results in real time. Not that I've tinkered with that just yet. So
if you're a web developer, you must have Google Analytics in your websites. Analytics.google.com is where to go if you want to have a play around.
And of course, yes, thanks to the wonders of Twitter and Facebook and things like that, we're seeing a lot of real-time search and, you know, things impacting what we find in search results now. So, all good. So Google's done a bit of a tweak. The shenanigans with Apple.
Shenanigans.
What's Apple doing there? And Samsung, is that going to be the next thing you say?
No.
Apple.
I was going to talk about Apple 4S's and batteries.
Oh, no. Oh, dear. You're right, it is shenanigans. They've got a new iOS 5 now, especially to fix the battery problems.
Correct.
Apparently, iOS 5.0.1.
The batteries
just around the corner.
Went pretty down pretty hill pretty quick.
Did they?
Yeah. And so far that Apple had said it was going to release iOS 5.
0.0.1.
Yes. Which has a few fixes to fix the battery-related issues. Some people were complaining that their phone would only last a matter of hours.
Wow, what apps are they running?
Welcome to HTC World.
Correct.
I know a few people
get on board.
And I've never heard them complain about the battery life.
Really?
Is that an Australian thing or an American thing?
Or
an everyone thing?
It's an everyone thing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
First I've heard of it.
Really?
It's a bug in iOS 5.
Maybe I should pay attention to the tech world a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, it's up to 502 now, according to Darksplod on the chat.
502?
Yeah, so they've had to fix their 501. It's a fix for a fix.
Oh. Elroy in the chat room says the battery in his iPhone 4S is fine.
Yeah. I don't know. It must be some certain apps or data usage or something that's actually killing it. I'm sure if Warlock was here, Warlock's noticeable by his absence in Sydney tonight.
His phone's probably flat.
Yeah, correct. He's an Apple guru. He knows all these sort of things, which is good.
I've been noticing my HTC battery hasn't been lasting as long as it used to, particularly in the last couple of days since I got back. So,
really?
I'm not sure whether it didn't like being switched off for a few days or...
Did you put iOS 5 on your HTC?
No, I did not.
Maybe it didn't like the humidity.
Maybe. Maybe it's like me, it's just feeling tired and worn out.
My husband's
fine. want to be back on holiday, yeah.
Well, we're in that gap between the Melbourne Cup and Christmas now, which is a mental... Well, I don't know about you guys, but it's sort of like you're taking that last breath
even
before
I went away, there were Christmas things in the supermarkets. I don't know what...
In October.
Yes.
Lead in our chat room says...
If you work for Sci-Fi or Woolworths, go buy a calendar.
Yes, Siri kills... Maybe it's Coles. Siri that's doing the damage.
Siri. Yeah, it kills battery life.
Hey,
although I know that Elroy's been putting Siri through the hoops.
Yeah, yes.
And he says this is okay.
Siri went down too, by the way, in the first week. Did you know?
No.
What happened to Siri? I have to find it. Well, apparently it was inundated or something like that. Hang on, I've lost it now. I was on my rundown and now I've lost it. But talk amongst yourselves. But yes, Siri, the voice recognition stuff, which is working really well from all accounts, has apparently had
a bit of an outage.
Here we go. I knew you found it here somewhere.
Siri takes industrial action.
Yeah, yeah. Went out with Alan Joyce.
It's got Qantasitis.
Yeah, Siri's Apple new voice assistant feature for 4S, the phone 4S, that is, suffering from an outage which rendered it useless on many iPhone owners. You could say, what can I help you with? Would be like a prompt for it, and it would come back with, sorry, I'm having trouble connecting to the network, followed by, sorry, I'm not able to connect to the network. And finally, the last hurrah, sorry, I don't have a network connection. So that was Siri's little outage. Not sure why. Not sure why, but...
how many people experience that?
I don't know. By the way, you know how we had Adam Turner talking about Siri on the phone the other day? Well, more the point, Siri...
He did an entire view from the couch.
Siri came in and did a view from the couch. For those of you who would like to hear the complete uncut version...
The Mega Mix.
The Mega Mix. It is on the website under the Adam's View from the Couch. Just go back to episode 43, I think it was, and there's a little bit there. But just make sure they're... Well, you know, it's Adam. What can I say? He might call in yet. You never know. Lid might call in on
Skype.
Oh, no,
don't start again. He was livid last week.
Livid? Why?
Yeah. Because you said, well, wish Adam would call in, and he was sitting there. Yeah, but he was sitting there waiting for you to call him, and he wouldn't let you...
My people talk to your people and all that sort of stuff.
Wouldn't let you forget it.
Yeah.
Is he turning into a bit of a diva?
Oh, well, you know.
First it was a tantrum about my theme song.
He gets his own segment, so you'd think that'd be enough, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Maybe he needs cupcakes.
Maybe.
That's how you...
Everybody needs cupcakes.
Placate people with cupcakes.
All right.
It works.
We've got a view from the couch coming up later. We're going to have a bit about video games coming up later.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of things. We never get through the whole rundown these days. I don't know why I bother, really, but nonetheless. Also, we're going to take a break.
Before you do, can I ask a really quick question?
You can ask a long question if you like.
You just did ask another one.
did Google...
Don't you hate that?
Yes. did Google do something while I was away and get their act together for Google Plus and Google Apps to talk to each other?
Have you noticed anything, Dr. Wrong? Google Plus and Google Apps?
I'm not a Google Apps user.
I'm not really a Google Apps user either.
Because you can't use Google Plus if you use Google Apps.
Yeah, well, look at me. Look.
Look at me.
Oh, you're on Google Plus.
That's my Google Apps email address.
Actually, I got a notification from Google Plus the other day, and I should have been more surprised when I received it. I thought, oh, that's nice. Graham's on Google Plus. But that has...
I think
ramifications.
Unless you talked about that last week, that has snuck completely under our radar.
We did not speak about that last week, so that has snuck under the radar.
So there's something big.
So what you've been whinging and bemoaning for the past 2 months,
they're fixed.
If not longer, is now done and dusted. They're fixed.
Well, the evidence suggests that probably it is, yeah.
You're going to have to put that through the hoops in the next break and just let us know if it's fully functional.
I will do my best.
And see how much of a drama you can cause with Google Apps at the same time. See if they both sit side by side, happily together.
Excellent. All right, we're going to take a break when we come back. E-learning, what's it all about? What does it mean to you? Is it good? Is it bad? Is it indifferent? People get awards for it, apparently. We'll find out all about that with Simon after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So how do I do this calculation?
They called me on my mobile to ask me where the data was bad.
Or am I the last geek standing?
It's a bit harsh, isn't it?
Probably a little bit harsh.
I'm remembering conversations I didn't have.
Can I just say...
That would be a benchmark.
It would.
Maybe there is truth to that. No.
Maybe.
Those same clueless people have now got iPhones.
Oh, dear.
Ouch. Now, hang on.
Because
entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio. It's everywhere you need it. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Welcome back, everyone. This is Tech Talk Radio. It's great coming here in the light outside now. We do this show later in the day. You might be listening to us early in the morning. Forget about that, but... It's nice coming to the studio in the daylight again, isn't it? And it's hot outside.
Are you trying to confuse all our listeners?
Yeah, I am, because I was just chatting to Lid on the Skype chatty thing there, and she says it's freezing in Palo Alto at the moment, and she's going to make a special effort and go out to the garage next week. And I said, cool, literally.
Yes.
So you might hear from her on the show next week.
I used to hate doing Tech Talk Radio this time of the year in the old studio.
Because the cicadas.
That was
a long time ago, wasn't it?
It wasn't soundproof.
Oh,
it had this horrible noise in the background.
Oh, well, them's the days. Yeah. Hey, we spoke a little bit about e-learning during the course of, I have over the past few months, especially with, even you this evening, Dr. Ryan. We were talking briefly about it with the one-on-one computer education thing in schools, or
That's
Victorian
right.
schools at the moment in particular.
Running state-of-the-art XP operating system.
Yeah. Oh, they might change to Windows 7 by the time we get it. You never know. It's cheap enough, isn't it?
Would have thought so.
Yeah, it's only a couple of shillings these days. Adam makes some good points coming up in the View from the Couch very shortly, but stay tuned for that. But in the meanwhile, we're joined in the studio this evening by Simon Hahn, who is, as alluded to, he's the president of the E-Learning Industry Association of Victoria. Now, up until a few days ago, I didn't know we actually had an association in Victoria for e-learning. I just thought we were blazingly heading into the future, trying to do the best with education department systems and things like that, but apparently not. And I also learned that there are some awards for excellence and things like that. So, and they're coming up pretty shortly too. So welcome to the Tech Talk microphone. Simon, how are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks for coming in. So what's e-learning? Apart from the obvious, we're all sitting there, oh, that's where you get a computer, jump online and hit the internet or maybe use some software or something. Is that e-learning?
Look, that is e-learning, but e-learning essentially involves any type of technology that is used to deliver training or learning content, educational content. So everything from, you know, your basic web page through to, you know, fully engaging and interactive flash programs.
Interactive flash. So you've ruled out Apple there for a little bit for a few people, but nonetheless, yes. Sorry, it's a dispute in our studio from time to time. But yes, internet, it's probably very relevant these days, I guess, the online side of things, especially for the kids these days, because, and I'm sort of thinking, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but we don't have Encyclopedia Britannicas in the school classroom. Well, some might, but we don't particularly. Is this the type of e-learning that you're fostering in Victoria?
The association itself represents around 250 organisations or businesses in Victoria that are involved in e-learning, and then we're talking about developers, suppliers and users. So the industry in Victoria employs around 2,000 people and represents around $300 million annually in terms of spend. So it's a fairly significant and growing industry, but it covers from K-12 schools right through to vocational education and training programs, universities and you know, a very big part of it, government and corporate e-learning training programs.
Okay. And hence the reason why you have awards to recognise those who have achieved, I guess, right across the scale, is it, from software developers through to users?
Well, more around the developers. So we have categories covering schools, universities, vocational education, training. We recognise lifelong learning. So anything that embraces e-learning as part of delivering programs.
It's a rapidly changing industry, especially from a technological point of view. How are the developers keeping tabs with those sort of things? Do they, obviously, it's, you know, every year we get new browsers and new ways of looking at things and video supported bigger and better. It must be a challenge for them.
Yeah, well, you touched on one of the great challenges earlier, which is the use of Flash. And to date, we've predominantly used Flash-outputted content, if you like, in the e-learning space. But as you alluded to, Apple don't support Flash. And with the growing use of mobile, what we call mobile learning, where we're delivering over tablets, smartphones, those types of things, we're alienating a large portion of those people. So a lot of challenges. The sort of technology that's probably emerging at the moment is HTML5, number of developers, including ourselves, building frameworks to deliver e-learning content in HTML5.
From a technical point of view, Flash was never a really good solution. It was just the best one available at the time for a while. So moving to the more developed technologies like HTML5 makes a lot of sense. So
it does,
and I'm glad to hear that you're talking that way and not just sticking with the Flash.
We've only probably finally just mastered how to get the best out of Flash, so it's a little bit disappointing in that respect, but absolutely. I mean, from a
But the same concepts will apply. It's just a case of working out how to use the new technology. The concepts that have been learned in Flash will still apply.
Absolutely.
How to design a user interface and so on.
Well, I think particularly too, the evolution of e-learning has moved from a lot of early e-learning was very boring, text-based, image-based type learning, and it's turned a lot of people off e-learning, given it a bad name.
Mm.
We refer to it as next button fatigue syndrome, people sitting at a computer just hitting the next button as quickly as they possibly can till they get to the end of the module, and then they think, let's, you know, try and wing the assessment and get through it. But with the inclusion of a lot of animation and video-based content, HTML5 is going to be terrific. So that's where it's evolved to.
I had that very argument with a certain member of the education department the other day who were issuing computers which didn't support HTML5. And I said, well, hang on a minute, you're giving us computers which, because HTML5 does the full screen video and it's really easy to code from a developer's point of view. It's just one line of code and things like that. Very easy. But yet the kids potentially going to miss out if they don't have up-to-date browsers and things like that in their computers. But that's not what we're here to talk about at this particular point in time. I guess I'm encouraged to hear that HTML5 is being embraced in the e-learning side of things, because it means that, as you say, Simon, we're not going to get boring videos that are the size of a thumbnail of someone sitting up there. You can have professionally made, high-quality videos which people, I'm assuming, can interact with.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's the future of e-learning. It's interactive content and where you can have branching scenarios, choose your own adventure. So depending on how you interact or respond to a certain part of the content, will determine which way you go through that learning module. So people can drive their own experience through the learning module.
All right. I guess we've had our school hats on, but which other aspects of industry does e-learning apply to outside of traditional learning environments, schools, universities, et cetera?
Yeah, look, the big one from a corporate perspective would be the banks. You touched on them before, but when you've got 40, 50,000 employees spread across Australia, anywhere from branches to call centres to corporate offices, then e-learning really becomes a no-brainer. It allows them to disseminate on a consistent basis content across their whole organisation very quickly. So for those bigger organisations, they've been using e-learning for some time, and you know, there are a lot of those banks now starting to invest significantly in the e-learning programs.
So when we talk about e-learning, are we talking about content delivered to individuals on their own PCs at their desks or at their homes or on their own iPads or whatever? Or are we also talking about e-learning classroom situations where you've got a class full of people sitting in front of computers with an instructor at the front as well?
Yeah, in the past it's more been the former that you talked about, so people on their own interacting through their PC, laptop or device. But more and more now, that virtual classroom style of what you talked about has become very popular. And there's a lot of technology and producers that are getting involved in how to moderate and effectively. They've come up with a title at one of the banks. They call them virtual classroom producers, and they actually run the virtual classrooms as if they're a producer, probably a lot like what you guys are doing tonight in terms of how you run your radio station, in terms of engaging people across that virtual classroom and participating and interacting in the session.
But also in a literal classroom, not just a virtual classroom, where you've got a group of people together in the same room, but all also using the electronic content as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of that, particularly around systems type training, where it makes sense that you'd do that training on how to use an application or a workplace system in that environment.
Yeah.
In that sort of an environment, Simon, is e-learning, is it software agnostic or neutral, or is there a particular software that you recommend or that you endorse for that sort of a learning environment?
Yeah, look, it's reasonably agnostic. There's a number of rapid e-learning tools on the market, Lectora, Articulate, that allow people that don't necessarily have the ability to program, if you like, to be able to create fairly basic content and convert those into e-learning modules. So that's a really good place for organisations to start, because, I mean, some of the high-end e-learning can get very expensive, where you're involving video production, audio production, XML programmers, Flash programmers, and those types of things.
And you want it as a two-way street as well, don't you? Not just the person who's delivering the presentation, disseminating the information, you also want participants to be able to respond, don't you, and share their responses with everyone else who's participating.
Absolutely, and that's a big challenge that's facing us at the moment too, is around social learning and incorporation of social media and social platforms in terms of that learning experience. So it does allow a lot more contribution by the people participating in the learning. That does make a lot of organisations nervous, particularly schools. They're struggling with how to tackle this. They have this absolute need to control the content, get very concerned when they might lose control. So that's a big challenge for the e-learning industry at the moment.
But even for people who are interested in providing educational content, there's even open source tools for providing these. You don't need to spend a gazillion dollars to develop something. You can use something like the Moodle open source package to develop a course on and provide that relatively easily.
Absolutely. Moodle is an open source learning management system that allows you to create and manage the delivery of content. And I think where we'll really start to see e-learning take hold is where it becomes produced. A lot of the e-learning becomes produced by users. So the ability for them, even if it's just to grab a video camera, record a 3 or 4 minute video, put some instructional design around that and publish it. And
put a quiz on the back of it to back it up. Yeah,
absolutely. So we empower the subject matter experts on different topics to be able to create and publish and disseminate content.
Mm.
The challenge then becomes, how do you find that content? And, you know, how do you assume it's of some quality? And then things like the ability, like a lot of the social platforms that allow people to rate the quality of the content becomes important.
As with any media, production value is everything, so...
Absolutely.
Yeah. really to give a good experience to the end user.
Absolutely.
Well, YouTube, I think there's a lot of those, this is how to do this, this is how to, from anything from baking a cake to jailbreaking an iPhone, you can find that on YouTube.
Yep.
So I guess this is just...
And some of them very, very well done, and some of them extremely poorly done.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I guess what you've got to do with e-learning is engage the viewer or the person who you're trying to teach. I know with kids and stuff like that, it's really hard to do. So colour and movement and all those sort of things is really critical.
Yep.
Right through to, I guess, you're looking at adults where you don't want to bore them, as you were saying before, Simon. You just want to keep them who sort of engaged... but at the same time, wanting to stay with you. That'd have to be a fairly, I guess, when you've got the distractions around you of e-learning, the kettle's boiled or the bell's gone, or, you know, whatever it is like that, it's so easy because you're not being, you don't have a teacher in front of you or you don't have a class, because it's really one-to-one, isn't it, in a lot of respects? That's really the challenge, isn't it, with e-learning?
Absolutely. And one of the great advantages of e-learning is that it is self-paced. So the learner, if you like, can move through the content at a speed that suits their learning style. Now, if you're all over it and you want to get through it quickly, it can suit you to really work through it quickly, whereas someone might need more time. But it's that engagement aspect that's really important. And, you know, we see a lot of value in actually using entertainment as part of that. And with a new generation coming through that are spending a lot of time engaging with games and really high-end quality graphics and visual interfaces, if you serve them up text-based rubbish, that's what they're going to think of.
Well, this is where this e-learning can incorporate video, incorporate games, incorporate, you know, hide and seek on the internet, I guess, really kind of, you can bring in any of those technological challenges to keep your subject entertained.
As long as the technology doesn't get in the way of the learning.
Yes.
That's the...
Yeah, and I think that was a trap probably 6 or 7 years ago. You know, we used to make things flash just for the sake of making them flash, yep. or bells and whistles going off, and it took away actually from the educational experience. So it's getting that balance between technology and education where you get some really good results.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're talking to Simon Hahn, who is the president of the E-Learning Association of Victoria. We'll talk about the awards in just a moment. What are the obstacles for e-learning, apart from ones we've already touched on? We've talked a little bit about the development process and the tools that we have. Are there any other obstacles that we don't normally take into association with e-learning?
I think now it's more available than what it was, and so with the advent of these rapid e-learning tools and the ability for users to drive and generate their own content, it's mm-hmm. stripped away. There have been challenges around accessibility, so a big part of education is being diverse and being able to cater to learners with disabilities. So
okay.
How do you keep content interesting whilst making it accessible at the same time?
All right, we've got listeners like in Katherine or any remote part of Australia, for example, and they might find a college educational course that they choose to do. Are we getting to that point where you can now do a whole syllabus of a course online and be examined and then awarded appropriately to your ability?
Yeah, no, you can actually now complete fairly high-level degrees completely online. So it is moving to that.
And are we seeing that from credible institutions? Because we talked about the credibility of the content before. Are we seeing a Melbourne Uni, or are we seeing these funny schools that you can get a thing in the mail from? Like, is there anyone policing that, or do you just, like, it is in schools at the moment, you go to the university because it has that reputation?
Yeah, no, still very much reliant on the reputation of the body itself, but you'd be struggling to find any university, no matter how high quality, that isn't using some form of e-learning as part of their delivery now. Now, whether that's making recordings of lectures online through podcasts, online completion of assignments or examinations, it's widely used. Last year, BRW identified in the top 10 fastest growing industries online education as one of those top 10 fastest growing. A lot of that coming out of the university sector in terms of them embracing e-learning as part of the delivery of their curriculum.
So talking about the actual qualifications, Simon, you're talking about diplomas, diploma level, undergraduate level study?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Even bachelor degrees and some of those types of things. So
it was not all that long ago. It was just entirely hands-on. You just had to go sit in classrooms, lecture theatres, you know, tutor groups, and you just had to do the hard yards at university, didn't you?
Absolutely. And the question's always been around the credibility of assessment and making sure the person on the other end of the PC, if you like, is the actual person that, that you ultimately award the qualification.
How
to.
Do you achieve that?
Yeah, no, good question. I think like anything, though, if people want to cheat, there's opportunities to do that. And you hear the stories about people sending their friends in to do exams in exam halls for them. But there is a lot of online assessment through actual, you know, communicating directly with people to make sure that they are, in fact, that person and they have that knowledge.
Lid in our chat room has said social and educational is good for kids. And Maud also in our chat room says you need good instructional designers to create a good e-learning package.
Yeah, no, that's spot on around instructional designers. Instructional designers are the people with the experience to ensure that the content is written or presented in such a way that it has educational value, recognises whether it be adult learning styles or children's learning styles. And where you don't invest in that instructional design, you tend to get poor quality programs. And it's a really difficult skill set to find. There's not a course you can do at university in instructional design. And as someone involved in the industry, it's probably the skill set we find the hardest to find. So that's a challenge.
Lydia's just put a link up in our chat also, which we might put online later, for Harvard University, their extension school, which is all their online courses designed around getting people who live in remote and distant locations. So it's really here, isn't it? It's really starting to kick.
Absolutely. Part of the mainstream education. Harvard have got a fantastic offering, both that one that Lydia's referring to and a corporate one that provides access online to a lot of their resources.
Study from anywhere in the world. We offer more than 150 Harvard online classes available in two formats in fall and spring semesters. So that's good. So you're obviously taking on the brand reputation of, okay, I'm going to study at Harvard. I'm going to get a qualification from them, yet here I am on the other side of the planet, in Australia or wherever you might be listening.
That comes back to that accessibility part, so the ability for people wherever they are to be able to access quality educational resources.
Now, your organisation represents Victorian educational providers. Are Victoria leading this trend in Australia, or are there other states keeping up with Victoria, or are we lagging behind? What's the state of play?
My parochial view is that we're well ahead, but
good.
The association itself was formed under a state government program called the ICT Clusters Program about 5 years ago, which encouraged ICT-related businesses and communities to come together. You know, part of that association has been the annual awards program that we're running this week on Thursday night to recognise educate or e-learning excellence across seven different categories, and that includes entries from everyone from the University of Melbourne. There's an entry there from the producers of Animalia, the children's book and television show that they converted into an e-learning educational resource. So really wide range. There's a game or a learning app that's designed for children to go on and play little maths games, and they can keep track of those and the results and things
kids
like that.
Kids love
so
that.
Of really good stuff.
That's, yeah. The maths games are really big. I know my kids just love getting on there and tinkering with those sort of things. So any other categories in the awards that are worth you've touched on a few just there?
Yeah, absolutely. So we look at the schools, the universities, lifelong learning. We look at vocational education and training, so picking up that Certificate 3, Certificate 4 diploma type level, and then learning systems as a separate category as well.
What's e-learning K-12? Can you explain that?
Yeah, that's the school's category, kindergarten to year 12.
Oh, K-12's kindergarten to year 12. Right, gotcha.
We love using our own lingo as well. So.
Acronyms in the e-learning setting. Here we go. Oh, dear. All right, so that's good. So you've got the awards on this Thursday night. What do the recipients get apart from congratulations? Do they get funding towards their are there sponsored type rewards?
No, it's all about the recognition rather than the reward itself. But no, they do get a lovely trophy, and we have two really good guest speakers this year. We have the Minister for Education, the Honourable Martin Dixon, coming along and as a keynote speaker. And then the Chief Technology Officer from NBN is coming along to talk about NBN and what that might mean.
Well, that's going to play a major role coming up with deployment of high-quality video and graphics, isn't it? So
absolutely. Even though it's a lot better, we still are a little bit constrained by bandwidth in terms of what we can do with content. So if that plays out, as we all hope it might, then great opportunity.
Better than it was 5 years ago, but still got a long way to go, doesn't it?
No, the first project I was involved in involved us delivering science in schools assessments to up to 850 people in a school over a 28K network, all connecting on at once. It was an absolute disaster.
Ouch!
So. So it's come a long way, I'm pleased to say.
Does it concern you, the political future, where the opposition are promising to dismantle the NBN, basically, when or if they come to power? Is that a concern to the e-learning community?
Oh, look, I think it's a concern. I'd be surprised, though, if government weren't embracing some form of broadband that would...
but they're defining broadband as 12 meg, which is, as you say, barely enough for current technologies.
For one person, let alone be shared by, a thousand.
By many, yeah. Look, we still struggle with the fact that we still have to often cater for the lowest common denominator in terms of speed. So, you still have to design towards that lower end of the spectrum.
Good fun, that, isn't it?
Mm. Is there anyone in Victoria who stands out as doing really good e-learning? Who's the leaders in the class?
Without talking about my own organisation, Selmat, who are one of the leading providers and developers of e-learning content. No, look, there's a whole
range. Day job.
That's the one that pays the bills. Look, there's a range, and it's interesting if you see the mix. We did a survey probably 4 years ago, and most of the providers or developers were, 1 to 5 man operations, if you like, or they might have been, people that have gone out and with a bit of a technology and education background and started developing, and it's now evolved into more significant sized organisations employing sort of 20 to 50 type people. So that's where it's evolved.
I had been kind of hoping you were going to say, oh yes, Melbourne University are the leaders in this field, they're doing things really well, but you didn't. You've gone for the smaller specialist companies who are doing the hard yards. Is that something that we hope will change, that some of the bigger institutions and the big names will start to...
Yeah, look, I think the universities have put more of their investment into the learning systems and the learning platforms rather than necessarily the content itself. So
do they need to partner with the kind of companies you're talking about?
I think so. And I think there's been a certain reticence for them to actually work with private providers in developing that content. I think they like to keep a lot of that academic content to themselves. So, look, it's certainly coming. And it's been interesting. We've only had the universities category in the awards for the last 2 years, and it was taken out last year by Monash University for some really cool collaborative lecture participative software program that they'd put together. And there's a number of entries this year from University of Melbourne, Swinburne, and a number of organisations. So they're coming along.
That's good.
It's exciting times, really, isn't it? When you think about what we've got now and what we had, we've come leaps and bounds. And our kids that are growing up now, well, poor e-learning, you won't have to leave home, surely. You can sit there and learn, or you could be wherever you are. I think it's going to be great. Exciting times. Exciting times. Simon, thank you very much for coming in and sharing us about it. Good luck with the awards on Thursday night. Based on when you're listening to this, this could have been the other day. Hopefully we'll hear a bit about them in the main room. If not, shoot us an email and we'll talk about who won some of the stuff on next week's
show. Yeah, we should mention that on next week's show, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming in this evening. And what do you think, crystal ball stuff? Where are we going to be in 10 years' time? Are we all going to be using e-learning, do you think, or is it just... It's just a slow... What do you think?
I think that there's always going to be a place for classroom or facilitated learning.
It's getting the balance right, I think, isn't
it? Yeah, and
we're all learning, aren't we, at the moment? Both educators and developers. Everyone's trying to find the mix.
I think so. I think what we'll see is a lot more little, what we call short hits of training, so little 2 or 3 minute pieces that get pushed out to your mobile phone or your tablet.
Ah, so it's going to be device-dependent types of learning, do you think?
Not necessarily device-dependent, but the... Little consumable chunks of training and knowledge, if you like. So where you've indicated a preference around developing your knowledge in a certain area, little educational pieces coming out across whatever device you prefer and the way you want to consume it.
So instead of in a business situation, instead of sending your staff off for a week's training, you might give them 10 or 15 minutes training, every day or every week for, on an ongoing basis and achieve the same result.
Absolutely, because that is the great challenge, to get people in a classroom for a day or 2 days or a week. It's really hard.
I also see it too in a commercial sense, from, say, for example, a provider of a piece of hardware. Let's take a Mixmaster for a cake thing. Rather than actually sitting down and read the book, because no one does it, if you've got your iPad handy next to your device and you're doing your e-learning over your iPad whilst you're doing the cake, I reckon that's got to be a real winner, because everyone's time challenged. Got the machine out, got the box out. What can I do with this? Press play or interact with it. Wow. Next thing you know, hours are gone. I reckon there's a good future for that.
Yeah. No, consumer-focused e-learning is definitely the future in a growing market. So,
Simon, thanks for your insight on that this evening. It's been great.
Thank you very much for having me. Cheers.
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
I'm surprised they don't stand out the front healing lepers.
Trying to model these proteins takes a huge amount of computing power.
Looks like something Lady Gaga would wear.
I think a lot of people did give them shtick.
The boot up time is actually faster than the mobile phone 7 time.
Circuit switch networks, packet switch networks, two different things.
How do you kill it?
Put it in the washing machine.
Then Graham replied,
yes.
Doesn't like the way it looks clean.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
There we go. We're back. Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, Lena Van Deventer, freshly refreshed with a white cup of...
Freshly squeezed water. Lena.
Yes.
That was great hearing from Simon Hahn about the e-learning.
I think it's got a lot of potential.
I've done e-learning before.
I think we've just got to get the imagination behind it and everyone out there doing, like, you know, games and learning by that. I think it's got a lot going for it. So,
and yeah, it'll only get better. It'll get better and better as time goes on, I'm sure.
Yeah? Yeah, that's good. What were you saying? You did something. Oh, no, maybe.
No. I did an e-learning course not so long ago, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah?
And it was for a particular industry permit that I needed, and I complete the e-learning online, and then I send off my money, and they send me the permit in the mail. And
okay.
Yeah, it was, unfortunately, it was just a series of PowerPoint slides, next, like what Simon was describing as, you know, what you don't want to do it,
yeah, exactly.
The bad old days.
Yeah.
And you get to the end, you answer a few questions, and yeah, congratulations, you're a winner. But hopefully it's, I think as time goes on, it'll move beyond that.
Now, Dr. Ron, I noticed in the office today that a big box arrived for you. Inside the office, inside the box, was a computer.
It was. That was exciting,
so
wasn't it?
So you're building a new computer, eh?
And I wasn't even there.
No, exactly right. Now, is this computer for you or for somebody else?
It's for somebody else.
Okay, my next question. Are you doing tech support on it?
I inevitably will be doing tech support on it.
Okay.
Did you buy me a new computer?
Oh, Lena, it was supposed to be a surprise.
Computer?
Andrew's let the cat out of the bag.
Is it a Mac?
Nope.
Then it ain't for me.
It's not for you, you're right.
It may be for you. You never know. Ooh. As Adam Turner is about to tell us.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
I helped my mate Captain's spreadsheet buy a new notebook last week. So, as the tech-savvy friend, it naturally fell upon me to help him set it up and transfer across the data from his old notebook. I make it sound like he twisted my arm, but to be honest, I didn't mind because I just like tinkering with computers. The backlight died in the screen of his old XP notebook, but it was around 8 years old, so he was well overdue to buy a new one anyway. Apart from the backlight, it seems fine, so the old notebook might get redeployed as a desktop machine or perhaps a headless server. Getting the data off the old notebook was fun because I could only see what I was doing by shining the light from my iPhone onto the screen, eliminating a few square inches of the display at a time. We could have hooked up an external monitor, but instead I just installed LogMeIn so I could drive the old XP notebook from the new Windows 7 notebook across his Wi-Fi network. With the data transfer underway, it was time to confront the age-old dilemma faced by everyone who offers tech support to friends and relatives. Do I take a light touch approach, or do I crack down and change everything to the way I think it should be? Changing things from Windows defaults tends to generate more help requests in the short term, but it can make long-term tech support easier. So you do what's easier for the user, or do you do what's easier for you, the unpaid help desk? If you work in tech support, this is probably a no-brainer. You do what makes your life easier. I'm the same when I'm come to setting up my family's computers, plus I install LogMeIn to make remote tech support easier. Sometimes I even partition the hard drive, move their documents to the second partition, and then use disk imaging software such as Ghost or Acronis to back up the OS partition to the data partition. It's handy for someone who, like me, who's constantly tinkering with their computers, but it's kind of overkill for your average home computer. I'm a little bit less draconian when it comes up to setting up friends' computers, and I try to strike a middle ground. The first step is always to run Microsoft Update to make sure you've installed all the latest updates and security patches. Admittedly, Internet Explorer has come a long way since IE6, so I left IE9 as the default browser for now, but killed off all the Windows Live Helper add-ons and changed the default search to Google. I also installed Microsoft Security Essentials, which has a small footprint, keeps alerts to a minimum, and has a surprisingly good reputation. Captain Spreadsheet and his good lady rely on webmail at home, so I didn't need to mess around with the desktop mail client. It's not an iGadget household, so thankfully we didn't need to mess around with iTunes either.
Adobe Reader was already installed and he's going to install Microsoft Office. Otherwise, I would have suggested that he try OpenOffice. Captain Spreadsheet works in finance, as his nickname would suggest, so he probably feels more comfortable with Excel anyway. I also mapped his new network drive, which I helped him set up a few weeks ago, and installed Jungle Disk for online backups. I still need to set up his printer, but I'll see if Windows 7 is happy to install drivers and get it up and running. Printer manufacturers have an appalling reputation when it comes to installing unnecessary junk on your computer, known as bloatware, and I'd prefer not to use the installer CD if I can get away with it. The next step on a new computer is always to clean out as much bloatware as possible from the startup folder and drop it in a new folder called Startup Disabled just in case you need to put it back. The amount of bloatware varies between vendors and retailers, but it's rare that you find something you actually need. All that stuff does is chew up your resources and get in the way. Trialware versions of Office and Norton Antivirus are a major pain, because if you accidentally run it once, it continues to nag you. It's also worth checking in the system tray for unwanted software, and if you're still running into performance issues, maybe take a look at msconfig to see what's loading when Windows first runs. If you're still having problems, you could also open the control panel and check out the uninstall or change a program options to see what you can get rid of. Now, readers of my Sydney Morning Herald blog had a few good recommendations for this. Next time I'm setting up a new computer, I think I'll start with Decrapifier, which, as it sounds, is software you can download which removes most of the bloatware and crap on a new computer in one hit. I'll also try Ninite.com, that's N-I-N-I-T-E, which lets you create one installer to install a wide range of applications all in one hit with all the bloatware options disabled. I think Ninite.com deserves to be website of the week one of these days. I must say that I'm getting a bit sick of the buy a Mac line from the fanboys. Captain Spreadsheet found himself a decent entry-level Windows 7 notebook. It's a Core i5 processor, 4GB of RAM and a 500GB hard drive for $600. He asked me about Mac, but lost interest when I said the entry-level MacBook was going to set him back double that. I'm not going to recommend Mac to friends and have them pay double just to pay the Cupertino tax when Windows 7 will meet their needs. Once Captain Spreadsheet has everything up and running smoothly, I think I'll create a user account for day-to-day use rather than letting him run in the administrator account, as constantly running with administrator rights when you don't need to is an unnecessary risk. After that, I'd say my work is done here, at least for now.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Couldn't put it better myself.
Good tips there.
Brilliant. If you want to hear that again, View from the Couch on the Tech Talk Radio website. You click it and it'll play straight from it. You don't have to hear all the other stuff. You just go and listen to it time and time again. Really, really good tips in there.
We're sitting here nodding, going,
the preamble in here.
We do that. We do that.
It was good. It was. So there you go. If you're setting up, then that's why I asked you, are you going to set up? How are you going to set this one up you're doing that you got today, Dr. Roy?
Probably going to go down the same lines as, I'll probably listen to Adam's view as
go
I'm
back
setting
to the
it
view
up
again and just double
with
check.
With my finger on the pause button.
But it's amazing the bloatware. Like you see those antivirus things that they load up on you, and everything's a trial. Like normally it's 12 months, and then it's all of a sudden it's 2 weeks, and it's like, oh, and then it nags you. Look at the laptop right next to me here, which is doing that. It's not mine, but this one over here does exactly that. So people just get nagged time and time and time again. And the bloatware, the things you buy from whichever manufacturer.
Oh, yeah, the very first thing you do is go into the control panel and uninstall all the extras that they put on that you don't need.
Yeah. Decrapify does that too. We've had that as a website of the week too. Did you catch Adam's one through there? We'll come back to that for the website
of
the week.
We'll come back to that for the website of the week. That's a great one.
And, yes, please don't write in about Adobe. Yes, we know it's pronounced Adobe.
They're off in the chat talking about that now.
And Adam will be given a stern talking to in our ongoing efforts to improve the standard of English spoken on Tech Talk Radio.
What did you say? What comment did you make, Lena?
Sorry?
What comment did you make during the course of the break?
I did not make any comment about his geographical location and the effect that it may have on his
chosen
words.
He's on the couch. What are you talking about? Adam's on the couch. The other good one is Crap Cleaner, Sea Cleaner.
Sea Cleaner. No, I haven't used that one.
It's not called Crap Cleaner anymore, but yes, Sea Cleaner is good. Sea Cleaner is better, not so much for new PCs that have got all this foistware installed on them. Sea Cleaner is good for running on your existing PC after you've used it for a year and it's started to slow down a bit. Sea Cleaner will tidy up your registry, get rid of stuff that shouldn't be there, and make
that
it all
good.
Yeah.
I might have a play with that later on.
Sea Cleaner,
tonight, amongst other things.
Yeah,
excellent. All right. During the course of the week, I went to buy a hard drive.
Ooh.
I did. I said to the man in the shop, I said, I want to buy a hard drive. And he looked at me and he said, you know about the prices?
It's a cheese shop, sir. What size were you looking at?
2 terabytes.
Size
is irrelevant.
Is it?
Other people think size is important, but in this case,
so you're looking for an external drive?
No, an internal drive.
An internal drive. Oh, well, that's
an internal drive.
Yeah, 2 terabytes internal SATA drive should be, yeah.
$100 or something?
I wouldn't think it would be that much.
They've actually less than
200, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it was 179
yeah.
for 2 terabyte green. But anyway, the point of the story is that the drives have gone up in price because of the floods in Bangkok, because that's where the Western Digital factory is. And like Sony, when they had their earthquake, everything sort of stopped for a while and all that, and they finally slowly got back. The Taiwanese, what's the Thai company called? It can't be Taiwanese, that's a different country. The Thais.
The Thais?
Yeah.
Pacific Dunlop.
If you say so.
I don't know.
No.
Thais.
It's your story.
Thais.
I'm trying to think of, yeah, but anyway, the Thais.
The Thai people.
The Thai people, mm-hmm. Yes, they're underwater.
I thought you were talking about tyres and cars.
No, as in
toys.
Yeah. People from who are from Thailand.
Not Vietnamese.
Thailand.
No. Oh, can we just start all this again?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, there's floods in Thailand. Bangkok's underwater. As a result, Western Digital drives are disappearing or they're becoming scarce. So as a result, the price has gone up. Whether that's got something to do with Seagate or any other drive manufacturers hoisting their price because their competitors are no longer in the marketplace.
Right.
I don't know. Anyway, beware of that if you're going to buy a hard drive very shortly. Android phones. There's a lot of them in the studio. In fact, they outnumber iPhones 3-1.
Happy to be in that minority.
Correct. Carriers that sell customers cheap Android mobile phones could be handed repair bills totaling as much as $2 billion in the future.
Ow.
Yeah.
And they say iPhones are expensive. Boom, boom.
Costly hardware failures are more common on Android devices than Apple iPhones and BlackBerry phones, which have strict control over the components used in their devices. Mm-hmm. Cheaper Android models, costing as little as $100 to make, have helped Android emerge as the dominant platform in smartphones, attracting dozens of manufacturers ranging from Samsung to no-name brands.
Well, it makes sense because Android is not a manufacturer. Android is simply the operating system. Mm. Whereas if you have an Apple phone, Apple is the operating system and the manufacturer. Well, BlackBerry is the operating system.
And Android ends up on anything these days, from tablets to phones. Wonder when there'll be an Android operating system, or is that what Chrome was going to be? No, exactly.
Oh, you mean an Android operating system like for netbooks and computers and things?
Yeah, Google had touted that.
Yeah, they were going to do that, weren't they? We never saw that.
No.
Are you talking about the Chrome OS, or are you talking about Android on tablets?
I'm talking about Chrome OS.
We've sort of morphed into both of them, really. We've seen
they're
Android.
Two completely separate things, but so Android, let's not confuse the...
Yeah, but then I sort of said, with notebooks and netbooks, wasn't Google going to put their own operating system of sorts?
Which was going to be Chrome OS.
Chrome OS, yes.
Yeah.
Which is still happening.
Oh, it is still happening.
Yeah.
Haven't heard much of it of late.
A few weeks ago, there was a trial or a demo unit floating about. There was some comment on it.
Okay. Have to keep an eye on that over the Christmas break. That'd be good.
And yes, and there are certainly many tablets that are running Android floating around the place.
WebOS. That's a good one.
WebOS? No, that's something different. That's not Android.
No, that's right. That was the
HP touchpad.
Touchpad OS that sort of went wayward very shortly. Hey, you would have missed our great banking special that we had on Tech Talk Radio last week. We all thought of you because it was all the swipey stuff across the...
Oh, yes.
The near-field stuff and PayPal.
I dread to listen to find out what you said, Andrew.
Good. Absolutely.
I cleaned it up. All right.
Did you? Oh, good.
Came out okay.
Did you let him get away with anything?
No. No, good. You got away with nothing. You did very well.
Well done. Graham wasn't here, so I didn't have anyone to spur on.
He did an exceptionally good professional job.
Oh, well done, Andrew.
Yes. Anyway, it's time for this.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
Guess what?
He invented a steam engine.
No.
No?
Australia has finally approved the R18 classification guidelines.
Yay! Yes, we've been dragged kicking and screaming into the 22nd century.
We have. It's taken a decade to get here. It was first brought up in 2002, which is the year I graduated high school. Just to make you feel a little bit old.
Showing your age. You're showing our age.
Might finally have a light at the end of the tunnel in terms of that rating. Brendan O'Connor, the Federal Minister for Home Affairs.
What are the Attorneys General going to fight about now?
Who knows? Something boring.
Something constructive, hopefully.
Yes. Yeah.
He announced today that each Australian state and territory has signed off on the final guidelines required for the introduction of the rating. It's great that that's happened, but unfortunately the committee didn't do it in time for this year's final parliamentary session. So the R18 legislation will have to wait until February 2012 to be discussed in Parliament.
Oh, you wait till the opposition gets in and they'll roll it back. Like everything they want to roll back.
I hope not. It's taken so long.
I know. It's a great achievement. We've needed this for so long.
It is. Interestingly, once the R18 rating is introduced and approved by the Parliament, the classification board can start labelling games immediately. They can even reclassify games.
That was going to be my question. Anything out there which is MA15+ or the equivalent, can they pull it back
in?
They can
reclassify games that they feel have been inappropriately labelled or classified, which goes against the traditional rules of the classification board, which mean they can't consider a reclassification until 24 months after submission.
Yeah, but so this is different because they've got a new option, haven't they?
This is extenuating circumstances, yeah. This is, and they are, the whole reason this is here is to fix something you that's only broken.
Get a,
so.
Yeah, well, you only get a new classification sort of certificate once every 10 years in this country.
About that, yeah. I'll throw up on the show notes the PDF. There's a 16-page PDF that goes into details about the specifics on what constitutes an R18 rating and what will become of the MA15 rating. I would talk about it tonight, but it's a little too long, being 16 pages worth of stuff.
Yes.
So
good idea.
I shall move on. Sony has confirmed the PlayStation Vita will launch in Australia and New Zealand on February the 23rd next year, 2012. That's one day after its North American, European, African and Middle Eastern releases.
The Vita.
Yep, the Vita. Vita. The Vita. Vita. I haven't made my mind up yet.
Vita Brits.
Going to get one?
Probably not, now that the prices have been released.
Are they pricey, are they?
Yeah, oh. Pricier than I thought they would be. The Wi-Fi only is $349.95 Australian, and the 3G is $449.95 Australian.
And you have to change platforms, really, don't you? So everything that's old, is you have to go get new stuff.
Well, pretty much. Yeah. Europeans are only paying £249.
Is this like,
euros, sorry.
Is this like the Apple tax that you have here? Because everything over there
it's
in the
Australia
US is,
tax.
Yeah, well, yeah, because
in gaming.
In the like, if you go to the Apple Store, there's no tax in the US. You add your tax down the track, so it's ex-GST for want of a better term. Mm. And over here, it's all GST inclusive, so it appears to be dearer here.
But it still is dearer here.
It is,
even if you did a direct switch.
Yeah, but there's a middleman between the manufacturer. Someone has to bring it here, and they're getting their kick.
We call it the Australia tax.
Yeah,
we pay about $50 more than everyone else does for anything gaming related in general.
Most Australians are buying online these sort of things anyway. And buying from outside of the countryside, they're under $1,000, so you avoid that problem altogether.
They should be region unlocked, but I'll look that up for you. I'm pretty certain they are. The predecessor, the Sony PSP, is only $189.95 at the moment, so it's sort of hard to justify such a big...
You're running it out.
Yeah, well, yes. It's hard to justify
depleting
such a big
stocks.
Difference. The Nintendo 3DS, which is the main competition for the Vita. Which one are we going for? Can we have a moratorium on one of them?
Vita Brits.
Call it Vita.
I'm saying Vita.
Vita.
I'm going with it. Vita.
Cover all options.
Be a true, I'm going to go with Vita.
Be a true marginalist
person. The 3DS
person.
Is its direct competition, and that's only $249. So it's a $100 difference, which I think...
And there's no guarantee it won't get hacked either.
No, exactly. Well, there's no guarantee anything won't get hacked. But,
correct. Well said.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a pricey thing for kids coming up to around that time of year.
Yeah, but if you didn't have anything... If you were coming into the video game market, is it worth considering?
It's a personal call at any time, but I think it doesn't have... Like, the Nintendo 3DS, the hook for that was 3D gaming, and that was its party piece, whereas the Vita seems to only have a focus on social connectivity. So I don't know whether that's linking in with your Facebook and your Twitter accounts and doing all sorts of... that sort of stuff, like Game Center or those sorts of things. But I just don't think it has a hook. It doesn't have that party piece that the Nintendo 3DS had. So it'll be interesting to see what actually happens with it. Another interesting thing that happened this week, I think it's an industry first. A developer has begun talks with the American Food and Drug Administration to get its game recognized as a therapeutic drug.
Really?
It's
a bit weird.
Yeah. What is this, to relieve people of certain muscular strains or something?
No. Brain Plasticity Incorporated, I think I pronounced that probably, I hope I did, has been working on a series of cognitive games designed to help people with schizophrenia cope with and recover from their symptoms, specifically targeting the issues they deal with, attention deficits and memory loss. So in 2012, the company will host a study of 150 patients. They'll be prescribed a game at a dose of 1 hour, five times a week for 6 months.
No.
Yeah. And if they find the gamer's quality of life improves at that dosage of cognitive exercises, then the company will proceed with the FDA approval process.
No.
Yeah. At this stage, they've already received $3 million of funding from the National Institute for Health towards its schizophrenia experiments, in addition to the $2 million previously awarded from the Department of Defense for work done experimenting with cognitive games therapy for war veterans.
Department of Defense.
Yep, the Department of Defense is paying for games to be made.
This sounds like there's a lot more to this than meets the eye. Why would the Department of Defense be defunding game development?
Because it's saying that they're doing experiments with cognitive games therapy for war veterans.
Well, we were just talking not long ago about using games content in the learning environment.
Mm-hmm.
To make learning more interesting, to provide a better learning experience, why would that not apply in that sort
experience.
Of... Exactly right.
Yeah, and we talked recently, a few weeks ago now, about them busting a certain enzyme configuration with a game. It was sort of mapping the enzyme or something, or the amino acid, something like that. I'm not a scientist by any stretch of the imagination.
We noticed.
not even when it comes to fiction. So it was, sort of showing how games aren't just for fun anymore. Games, are, you know, we can get a lot more out of them than just having a little giggle in a play.
Agree.
So, yeah, I think that's really cool to see
if
where
you can
it's going.
learn with games, that's half the fun of learning, isn't it? In the schoolroom, even in the living room at home, if you're doing something, learn
I think
by
it's
games.
Good, and it'll help games become known for how they can help people more than sort of being treated as an adolescent pastime, which is good for games. And good for the industry.
I agree.
That's what I've got this week.
All right.
Just before you wind up the game segment, I've just been googling around. I found two different sources that say that Vita. Is the correct pronunciation.
Okay.
Don't click Elroy's link in the chat.
Sorry?
There's some message there saying don't click Elroy's link in the chat.
Oh.
He's put a link in there about Vita and some Phil ended up somewhere.
Oh,
which
right.
He didn't want to end up.
So is it Vita or Vita?
Vita.
Vita. Okay.
Do you like jelly beans?
I think.
Love them.
Do you?
Mad for them.
That's good. Do you remember a video clip many, many years ago now, Peter Gabriel, Sledgehammer, and it was all stop motion?
Nope.
No?
Nope.
Okay. Then you might be pleased to note.
I know the clip you're talking about.
Yeah. It was one of those...
Lena's way too young.
Yeah, she is. She's showing her age again.
Yeah.
it was one of those video clips where you'd walk past and you go, wow, isn't that innovative?
Uh-huh.
It had a lot of hours in the making rather than, you know, pointing a camera at someone singing a song and doing all that sort of stuff. Anyway, another one of these video clips, excuse me, has surfaced on YouTube during the course of the week, which I, one of the people in on G Plus alluded to, put a little thing up there, and I thought, wow, isn't that good? And being involved in that type of industry, it was quite good. It's a stop motion video made with 250,000 jelly beans.
Yum.
Yeah. Kina Granis, if that is how you pronounce it, or Granis, I'm not sure. It's got inflections and strange things on its characters.
Feeder.
Yeah, that's right. In Your Arms video clip was animated using 288,000 jelly beans. The effect is great, but the behind-the-scenes video gives you really good insight into how they did it.
Did it start out as 500,000 jelly beans?
That's a very good question. No one answered that.
Down to 288,000 by the end of the shoot.
But they're incredibly anal how they had all the little boxes with the different colours in the top there. You know, every jelly bean had its rightful place.
Oh, no.
I want that job.
And they actually...
Jelly bean sorter.
What they did was they actually animated the concept. Then they used a video projector to project down onto through a glass table onto a screen where they then arranged all the jelly beans under the glass. It was very interesting.
Oh, cool.
If you go and have a look, it's on the front of our website at the moment on the Tech Talk Radio website. Just click the link and you'll go there and have a bit of a look. And the behind-the-scenes stuff is really quite interesting if you want to have a look at the technical way.
While I'm still talking about games for a second, Uncharted 3 has come out this week, which is a massive game. Modern Warfare 3 is coming out this week.
Have you got it yet?
At new.
Oh, you didn't get a pre-release?
No. No, I didn't. And, yes, I talked about Arkham City. I'll talk about that a bit more next week. That's the Batman one.
Yeah, that'll be really
cool.
Can't
wait to sink my teeth into.
That'd be cool.
Yes.
That was, it's getting some really good accolades out there, 10 out of 10s type sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it must be one of those games. Which platforms? It's on all platforms, isn't it?
All of them, yeah.
Yeah, that's the main thing. So regardless of what you've got, you can go and play it.
Can I ask another games-related question as well?
Of course. Please do.
With this new PlayStation Vita.
Vita.
Why in the world
have Sony seen fit to reinvent the wheel and create a new memory card that's almost exactly like a flash card, except it's like an SD card, except it's not it's not an SD card, so it's incompatible.
This is the problem that PlayStation have been having.
No, this is the problem that Sony have been having for decades.
That's true, with the mini discs and all sorts of things. They had UMDs, which were tiny little discs to play in your PlayStation.
Yep.
Then they got rid of those and said, all right, we're going digital downloads.
Yep.
And now they've had stuff with memory sticks and they had stuff with...
Yep, Sony memory stick, which isn't compatible with anything else in the known universe. And now we've got a brand new memory card format that's almost exactly like an SD card, except it's not compatible with SD cards.
I thought they were memory stick duos or something.
Yeah. Those things,
and they didn't work in anything except Sony Ericsson phones.
And it's an awkward shape as well. It's large and cumbersome, and they just like to do that.
Apple could learn from them.
Yes, they don't need to learn from anyone. They're doing just
it's
fine.
It's the same. It's the same arrogance and lack of respect for anybody. Really,
we've already got industry standards. We don't need you to develop something completely new for no reason.
Mm.
Hey, Google Street View goes indoors. What do you reckon?
No, thank you.
Okay, moving on.
No, hang on. No, what's
like
that about?
I'd like to hear about it, but I don't want it in my house.
Don't you?
No.
I mentioned it in the opening of the show that in New Zealand they're doing a trial thing where Google Street View comes inside with your cameras. It's commercial properties, and obviously you invite them in, but if you wanted to check out a restaurant in New Zealand or something like that, you can actually...
That's not a house.
You can drive right... No, it's not a house.
What are you doing in my living room? It's all right, lady. You're just taking some Street View pictures. Go about your business. Oh, okay. My fault. Sorry.
Is this going too far, is my question. I thought, you're kidding me, aren't you?
Not if it's commercial premises,
you know, like,
and places
first
that are open to the public.
What would be great is you go into the local fish and chip shop. Oh, do I want to get my fish and chips from here or what?
You know what I'd like to see first, before that, before we see inside the restaurants, is every restaurant actually having a website?
Good luck.
Restaurants don't have websites. Why do you not have websites? Can someone go out and make them websites, please?
Because the kind of person that runs a website is the runs a restaurant is not the kind of person who has the skills or inclination to develop a website.
Someone needs to be their little intermediary.
What are you going
to do?
Go off and be the website police.
Them on the show.
They should because I can't look up a menu, opening times, closing times to any pub, restaurant, bar, anything.
You can. You just need
it's
to know
so
where to
annoying.
Look. It is.
Can't they just have the .com of their restaurant name, please?
Yeah, and then the very next thing you'll complain, oh, the website's static and hasn't been updated in 6 months, and you'll complain about that too.
They don't have to put prices. Just opening times would be enough. That's hard enough.
Phoenix is just trying to hack your Wi-Fi from the inside in relation to the Google. Mm. Someone had to mention it, didn't they?
Longtime friend of the program, Andy B, who's also conspicuous by his abscess tonight.
He's on a tram somewhere.
His abscess?
Yeah.
Ew.
Ew. He posted a few weeks ago a link on Twitter, I think, I'm sure it was Andy, to a store, like a convenience store or a liquor outlet in Richmond, I think, on Google Street View, and the camera had gone into the store, and like about, not just one step inside, like five or six or seven camera shots inside to the back of the store.
Was it a 360-degree thing?
Yes, aren't the cameras mounted on little cars?
Yeah, they are. They are. But
they detached it, obviously, or else there's a big hole in the...
That's what's happened. They've detached it. They've gone into the store and they've taken 100 pictures and stitched them all together inside the store. I'm sure it was in Richmond. It was a local one. And you could. It was so close, like, to the merchandise, you could read the prices off the price tags, and you have a proper view, 360-degree view of inside the store.
You see, now I know you're talking nonsense, because nobody puts price tags on anything anymore. No one's put a price tag on anything since 1981.
I'll send you the link. Yeah. It was quite remarkable. And also in the chat room, Yak wants to know who got the black ones, talking about the jelly beans.
The jelly beans.
Oh, yum, they're my favourite.
And
a seed.
Lid said she thought the coolest thing was that they used no blue screen in the production.
They used a green one instead.
Was a green screen, was it? Lid, you shot you down in flames.
They did.
Where
she's standing there with a red guitar and a green on front of a green screen, they used the two primary colours, all but blue. Probably because she got blue eyes.
Blue jelly beans? Oh, blue eyes.
Well, you traditionally either use green or blue. Red's a very large
Would it not
option.
Be simpler to simply use the generic term chroma key and not talk about red screen, blue screen, green screen, whatever?
Yes.
Fancy
yes.
words, Graham.
They are. But we like colour in our world.
You think chroma
colour
means?
Colour and movement.
Yeah. Anyway, we're now running late. Anyone else want to make us a little bit later, or shall we move on with the Odd Spot Gadget and Website of the Week coming up after this?
Listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
You should have seen the odd spot that Andrew sent me. That's with tone raised.
Sorry, Adelaide. Sorry, Brisbane. Sorry, Canberra.
Sorry, Darwin.
Oh, it'll get there in the end.
A question for Lena, gamer and mum.
Hey, that's me.
It's no good writing an agreement that's only enforceable in 1850.
Java, my friend. Java.
Yeah.
Could be Java. Yeah.
Have you got a spare Google Plus invite? Yeah, it's in the mail.
Yay, my first Nerd Alert.
I think that's first Nerd Alert.
It is.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
I'm on, aren't I? It's time for the gadget.
It is. Off you go, son.
Graham's trying to think up a witty put down for me in the chat room.
I already smacked you down in Latin.
Resorted to obscene finger gestures.
That gag's not on, is it?
It's not on, no. This week's gadget, despite Darren's gloomy outlook for digital radio in the correspondence this week, a gadget...
He's right, you know.
...is the Kenwood KDC U5049 DAB 200 watt.
Is that what that means?
Because
I was reading that in the rundown. I said, what the hell is that?
Can you say that again while I type it?
I'll KDC. Say it, it's a Kenwood. KDC U5049 DAB. It's a 200 watt car CD receiver with DAB Plus. An in-car AM and FM and DAB Plus receiver for your car. It features four 50 watt channels, a front auxiliary in jack for direct iPod connection, CDR and CDRW compatible, so you can pop your tunes in on a disc. Supports WMA and MP3 playback, which is good. Even has a front USB interface, which I like. I haven't seen many car radios that have a front USB interface. I think that's quite nice. Retails for about $399, but you can get it for a lot cheaper online if you have a hunt around. So I thought I'll just run with a DAB Plus in-car radio, because we should be seeing them now. I don't know if we're seeing them in new cars. I haven't bought a new car for years.
DAB's not what it's cracked up to be.
You're hanging out for the internet streaming, aren't you?
No, not
well,
really.
It's not DAB's fault. The broadcasters are not
correct.
Doing with it what they should be.
That's right.
Low bit rates and horrible. Get with the game. Do something decent
with it. It's supposed to be digital and good quality, but it's just not. It's all right if you're listening to voices and talkback.
It's like...
But if you're listening to music, it's like...
Like digital TV all
like
over
a,
again.
It's like a 128K MP3, which Graham used to cringe about.
Certainly lower quality than the FM analog broadcast. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's like deja vu all over again.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's our gadget. The Kenwood.
What?
KDCU 5049 DAB.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
This is exciting. I saw this today at Andrew's office.
Adam got me onto this. I thought this was brilliant.
Adam hinted at it as well in his view from the couch. www.ninite.com.
Ninite.
Ninite, N-I-N-I-T-E.com. Ninite is the easiest, fastest way, it purports, to update or install software. You just pick your applications that you want to install on your new computer and click the button that says Get the Installer. Ninite does the rest. It's fully automatic and it creates a package for you, which you download and you run and it installs everything. What could possibly be easier?
I know, but you're going to try during the course of the week on that computer and get back to us next week, aren't you?
I'm going to give it a try. It's pretty straightforward by the looks of it. We haven't tried it yet, but I'm keen to give it a run. There's buttons there for lots of different applications.
Does it give you a chance to do a customise so you can choose which options of the application you install and that sort
of stuff? I don't know, Graham. I'll
have to try
it.
Try it and see.
Yeah, let us know. I want to know.
The other good thing about it too is you can run the payload again at some stage down the track and it'll just update only the apps that need being updated if you haven't done
which
it.
Which means that the installer you create doesn't actually have the other installers rolled into it. It's just a
That's
downloader.
That's right. It's just a downloader.
It's one of those horrible installers that really is just a downloader and tricks you.
Yeah, but at least you don't have to go next, and go to each site and do it all yourself. I think that's got to be good. Anyway, give it a run, Dr. Ron, and let us know how it goes.
Give it a run. That's our website, Andrew. Ninite, N-I-N-I-T-E.com.
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
Hello to James, who's a longtime friend of the panel, and his suggestion this week for the application is the WhatsApp Messenger. You've got this installed on your phone.
No. Have I?
Yeah,
hang
you
on,
have.
Let me check.
Because I installed it, and it said, Andrew's got WhatsApp.
Really?
www.whatsapp.com.
No, I haven't.
You haven't?
Did you do it without me looking, or is this a different Andrew?
No. You're the only Andrew in my life.
Well, I'm going down
we'll
to
do
WhatsApp.
We'll do some tests after the
Doesn't
program.
Doesn't that need an apostrophe?
It does need an apostrophe, but unfortunately the domain name system which we have doesn't cater for punctuation.
That's no excuse for not having
got
an apostrophe
on my phone.
In the actual text of the website.
Oh, in the logo. Sorry,
Or in the text of the website. Like
or in the
such
text
as
of
here.
The website. Maybe it's a trademark.
Maybe it's a stupid trademark.
It's not on my phone. Move on.
SMS messages are expensive at about $1,600 per megabyte.
Yeah.
You don't want to be sending text messages unless you can help it.
Get an iPhone and use iMessage.
Well, that's the iPhone version, but WhatsApp is cross-platform. Works on iPhones, Blackberries, Androids, and even Nokias. These phones can all message each other with WhatsApp. Uses the same internet data plan that your phone's on.
But only if the person you're talking to has the same WhatsApp.
Has WhatsApp, that's right. You have to have WhatsApp installed. There's no cost to use WhatsApp.
Except your data charges.
Except your data charges. A lot cheaper than texting though, Graham.
Unless you're overseas.
And unless you're on a free text plan.
In which it's incredibly cheaper than...
Yeah, it would be good.
...than texting. It's expensive overseas because you pay to receive messages as well.
No, but you pay a gazillion dollars per kilobyte for your data if you're overseas.
Right. Mm.
Yes.
Right, so you're saying it'd be cheaper to message over...
Text messages
overseas.
are cheaper than data for overseas.
My only gripe about WhatsApp is on Android... It uses 8 megabytes of valuable memory and the application can't be moved to the SD card.
Oh.
It must run from the phone.
That's why I don't have it on my phone.
That's my only gripe.
Yeah, that'd kill me too.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
not good.
If you're interested, have a look. That's our application, WhatsApp Messenger.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
German police called to a weekend traffic accident found Yoda, the Star Wars Jedi Master, at the wheel of the offending vehicle. On his way home from a Halloween party, Yoda allegedly hit a pedestrian, then took off at light speed early Sunday morning.
So the Force was with him?
No, it wasn't. In a town near Frankfurt, and the victim suffered minor injuries. 2 minutes later, police arrested the Jedi, at which point he was taken
Obi-Wan
into custody into a nearby police station. Police later confirmed a 42-year-old man had a blood sample taken following a traffic incident and that the man's driver's license had been confiscated.
Why was he Yoda? Was he dressed like it or sounded like it?
What?
He was dressed like it.
Oh, he probably sounded like it too if he had that blood alcohol limit.
Innocent, am I?
Yeah.
In this case, the Force was not with him, a grim-faced police spokesman said. You never want to be in a headline that ends in "a grim-faced police spokesman said."
No.
The Jedi Council has yet to comment on the matter.
Oh, really? Okay, that's the show.
Oh, dear.
Cyberbullying, we're going to talk about that next week.
Are we?
Yes, we are.
Oh, do we have a special guest coming in?
Yes, we do.
Good.
So stay tuned next week. Oh, it's been one of those shows, haven't we?
It's a pretty ordinary tease. You're going to tell everybody who the special guest is? All right. Susan McLean, cyber safety expert.
Yeah. Conflict of interest.
And former... Is she why?
I've built a website. I can't be spreaking her website.
That's all right. As long as you acknowledge
that Susan McLean will be in next week and we're going to talk about cyberbullying.
Former police officer and she now works privately helping to educate people.
And see what the trends are happening. Because we haven't had her in for a while. I think the big issue...
She was on Tech Talk Radio a long, long time ago when she worked with Victoria Police and since become one of Victoria's leading authorities on
She travels the world. I can never catch up with her. You ring her and she's in some far-flung country talking to people about what's going on here in Australia. I think sexting is still a big issue with the young people of today. So we're going
to
talk about that.
So returning to Tech Talk Radio, Susan McLean.
Yep. It'll be good. That's next
Fantastic.
Week.
Fantastic.
See, we get all the people here on the show. We're going now. It's been fun. Any last words before I push this button?
I think you better press play.
Okay. Same time next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03-8682-9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.